All right. For those of you that may not have been here earlier, my name is Darren Dodds. I'm an extension cotton specialist at Mississippi State University. And today I'm going to talk about a project looking at the title I gave or guy gave me or whatever was Simulated 240 Drift. I will say that title can be a little bit misleading because there's also some other things I'll talk about in the presentation that could lead to some 240 issues on cotton. I would like to acknowledge the other folks that did this project. Guy Collins and his colleagues in Georgia came up with this project, and the other authors listed on here simply did some additional locations for them. So for most of you, if you've taken a look at the Delta Farm Press or Southeast Farm Press or Western Farm Press or a lot of the popular agricultural publications, you've seen at least some information probably about the Enlist weed control system. And really the driver for this system continues to be Palmer amaranth. For those of you that have it, I know Georgia, the Carolinas, Mississippi, Arkansas, especially, and then some other areas that have that. For those of you that have it and have dealt with it, this thing just continues to be the driver for our weed control recommendations. Kind of what I talk to my growers about, if you've designed a weed control program to control Palmer amaranth, you really don't need to worry about any of the weeds because you've thrown the kitchen sink at it anyway. I mean, you're applying multiple modes of action at multiple times throughout the year, and you're doing pretty much what you can do if you have this thing in a really bad way like some of our growers do. A lot of growers, the way they're combating this, we have went back to using a lot of residual chemistry, but a lot of growers are starting to put pretty heavy reliance on glufosinator Liberty. Some of the data from Guy and his colleagues last year, Stanley Culpepper and others, about 50% of Georgia cotton received glufosinate in some form or fashion. I would say in Mississippi, in my part of the world, that's probably more like 25 to 30%. If you look at about 10 to 15% of our acres are Liberty Link in some form or fashion. In 2013, about 20 or 25% was a wide stripe variety that received Liberty. At some point in time, I would say about 25 to 30% of our acres are receiving that. The concerning thing, at least in my mind, with these Liberty applications is in many cases, a lot of the folks that are making these applications are making multiple applications in the same year. I received a call this summer, and the guy told me he was getting ready to make his fourth application to Liberty. He wanted to know what I thought about it, and I said, well, it's off-label. I'm obligated to tell you that. And then after he got done cussing at me that he didn't care about the label, he asked me what rate to use. So those are the kind of situations that are going to get us in trouble with Liberty. And until we have some other options, like Enlist or Roundup Ready Extend Flex from Monsanto, really Liberty is toting a lot of the load for us. Certainly our residuals work well, but you think about somewhere like West Tennessee where 10% or less is irrigated, there may or may not get those residuals activated. They really need these kind of tools. So, the benefit of the Enlist weed control system certainly allow for post-emergence application of 240 to Enlist crops, and there'll be several Enlist crops coming out of this. And Enlist Duo will be the formulation that is going to be preferred, if not required, I guess. It's a proprietary blend of glyphosate and what's called 240 choline. For those of you that have not seen a lot of stuff about 240 choline, it's a reformulated 240, reduced volatility, reduced drift potential. It seems to be a greatly improved formulation, at least from some of the literature that's out there. So when you consider the efficacy part of this, the work that we did was in no way, shape, or form designed to really to look at efficacy. There's been a good bit of efficacy work done by a number of weed scientists, Stanley Culpepper, Alan York in North Carolina, Tom Barber, Pete Dotre, Dan Reynolds. There's been a lot of folks do a lot of the efficacy work. That's not really what we were concerned with. But just to show you some of that, you look at some of the species that there's literature out there on, things like Russian thistle, Palmer amaranth, some of the morning glorious carpet weed, the Enlist Duo tended to be very, very effective on those, tend to be 90%+ control. But certainly the gorilla in the room, when you think about Enlist or Extend Cotton, depending on which company you want to talk about, the gorilla in the room continues to be off-target movement. Everybody knows what 2,4-D can do to cotton. When you've seen it shake out of a spray line, when you hit a water furrow, go around a light pole, hit a bump, it shows up every year. We all know what 2,4-D can do to cotton. And when I show you some of the data, it may surprise you how little it actually takes to do that. certainly volatility has been the big concern in the past. I know the first time I went to talk to a grower about doing some of this stuff on his farm, he told me that, you know, I sprayed 2,4-D years ago and it rained and the water backed up and it volatilized and it moved 2 or 3 miles onto somebody else's farm. And, you know, the guy was just really ultra nervous about it. And that's where some of the improved formulation stuff will certainly help. Physical drift continues to be an issue. You know, the incidence of physical drift of 2,4-D right now is relatively low, but a lot of that relates back to use patterns. We're not really using it at a time when there's a cotton in the field where it could potentially drift onto it. When I think about looking at the potential for things to drift, I look at things like glyphosate on wheat. How much of our wheat gets drifted on, at least in Mississippi, through burn down applications? We get a lot of wheat that's drifted on. We have a fairly substantial sweet corn industry in the Mississippi Delta. There's been oftentimes that sweet corn has been hit by glyphosate drift. And you think about your neighbors that are growing rice. Not uncommon for rice to get glyphosate drifted on it. And that just kind of, in my mind, you know, puts the potential there for some of these things to actually show up. Also consider the fact that at least where I go in the Delta, the wind never, ever, ever seems to lay. I can tell you, most of the applications we've made of 2,4-D or dicamba tend to get made at 7 or 8 o'clock at night when it finally does lay down. In some cases, it doesn't lay down at night. Sometimes it'll blow all night on you, just depending on where you're at. But the other part of this that in my mind is just as concerning is tank clean out. And you think about cleaning out the tank on a sprayer and how time-consuming that is. And I just put this up there. This is from one of our growers in Yazoo City, Mississippi, right here. You look at all the rubber lines on that spray boom. If I can get this mouse to work. You can see all the lines coming off there, feeding the booms, all these lines going down the booms, not to mention the nooks and crannies in the bottom of that tank where your sump is and everything else. It can be very difficult to get all that clean out. And, you know, folks I talk to tell me it'll take them a couple hours to get some of these sprayers cleaned out. And a lot of times they just don't want to take a couple hours to give to do that. So they try to do it as quickly as they can and go on about their business. But to give you an example of sprayer clean out, this image was sent to us by one of our really, really good growers in the North Delta. Sent this in, said, look, I just happened to pull the caps off my spray boom one day when I got done spraying, this is what I found. And this guy had been spraying Roundup 2,4-D and lead off in a burn down. Pulled his caps off, that's what he saw in one part of it, saw that in another part of it, saw that in another part of it. And this guy's good at what he does. Went triple rinsed the sprayer out, cleaned it out, did the very best that he could. If you look at that, there's still not a lot. There's not a residue piled up like there was. But if you can see down in that tube at all, there's a lot of residue built up in that tube. Same way there, all this is residue left over from those applications. And that one there shows it even a little bit more. So you can do the very best you can do with sprayer clean out. And sometimes it is very, very difficult to get every little bit of it out of there. So I'm kind of a math person. Numbers work for me a little bit. So I just kind of threw this, and it's a rough scenario. You could probably argue with me on this if you wanted to. But I just kind of threw a rough scenario out there to kind of keep this in mind. So you think about when you're done with a sprayer, 30 gallons left in the bottom of it, maybe more, maybe less. But just say you're spraying 10 gallons to the acre. So you basically got 3 acres of material left in that sprayer. Think about making a 2,4-D application at a pint, 16 ounces. So if you're applying 16 ounces per acre and you got 3 acres left in that tank, theoretically you have 48 ounces of 2,4-D left in that sprayer, okay? We think about if you clean this thing out. Just say, you know, I don't know what the number is. I don't know if anybody knows, but effectiveness of that clean out procedure. By the time the water gets diluted, if there's any residue left in there, if you have spray lines that tend to be cracked or whatever and stuff hangs up in there, let's just say you're 90% effective in cleaning that sprayer out. That still leaves 4.8 fluid ounces somewhere in that sprayer, whether it be in a line, in a bottom of a tank, somewhere, whatever. Put 1,000 gallons back in it to go in there and spray that with that sprayer again. That leaves about 5/1000ths of an ounce to the acre. Consider 5/1000ths of an ounce and keep that in mind here in a little bit when I show you some of this data. So there has been a little bit of work done on this. I'll give Dan Reynolds and his guys a lot of credit. They're doing a fair amount of this work. And a lot of this data comes out of some of the Beltwide proceedings from last year, some of the Southern Weed Science proceedings from last year. Well, they did some work looking at 1/4 of a fluid ounce per acre of 2,4-D, and they sprayed this stuff weekly on cotton after emergence. So cotton come up out of the ground whatever day it was, let's just say Friday. Every Friday it would come in and spray it on the cotton. They saw the greatest amount of visual injury throughout the entire year, at a quarter of an ounce on cotton that was sprayed 2 to 3 weeks after emergence. When they came in and yielded this cotton, they saw that seed cotton yields were reduced 44 to 58% when this rate was applied 2 to 5 weeks after emergence. So basically, 2 weeks to 5 weeks after emergence, you're talking probably, I'm going to say 1 to 2 leaf to first square, roughly, just looking at the number of days. They did the exact same thing with dicamba. This is one of his graduate projects. Same thing. yield was reduced 14 to 21%, 2, 3, and 10 weeks after emergence. Two things to note about this. I think we all understand it, but cotton is much, much more sensitive to 2,4-D than it is to dicamba. Soybeans are exactly the opposite. Soybeans, if you open a jug, a Banville around soybeans, they're not going to like it. And cotton's kind of the same way with 2,4-D. So we basically put Guy and his colleagues put a study together to look at some really low rates of 2,4-D and look at how cotton would react to that when applied at various growth stages. And this work was done Moultrie and Tifton, Georgia, Starkville, Mississippi, and in Lubbock, Texas. So you got southwest represented, the mid-south, southeast. The variety in all these was phytogen 499. And without going into a lot of detail, we basically used small plot research techniques. There were four row plots. In my particular case, I had four row plots and I sprayed the center two rows just to give myself a little bit of a buffer from plot to plot because I know how sensitive cotton is to 2,4-D. They were harvested with a spindle picker modified for small plots, that kind of thing. So the rates that Guy and his colleagues chose for the study are six hundredths of a fluid ounce per acre and 1.2 fluid ounces per acre of 2,4-D. So does anybody have any idea how much 1.2 fluid ounces per acre is? There's a reason this Pepsi can is sitting right here. So a Pepsi can or a Coke can, whatever, is 355 milliliters in that can. 1.2 fluid ounces per acre is equivalent to 35 milliliters. So 1/10 of that Pepsi can per acre represents that 1.2 fluid ounce rate of 2,4-D on cotton. So you think about taking 1/10 of that can and putting it in a spray tank and putting that on an acre, and that's what that represents, just FYI. Six hundredths is 1/20 of that, so it would be 5/100 or something of that can of Pepsi, not very much. So we applied to cotton that was 4-leaf, and then on cotton that was 9-leaf, first bloom plus 2 weeks, first bloom plus 4 weeks, first bloom plus 6 weeks. Knowing that when we did this, usually or in most cases, once you get to bloom, most times you're not going to be making a lot of broadcast herbicide applications. If you are, you probably have larger problems, quite honestly. Did data analysis on this, and I'll show you some of that in a minute. So when you look at cotton height, this height was taken at first bloom. So at first bloom, the 4-leaf applications had went out and the 9-leaf applications had went out. If you look at this, the 600th ounce rate is denoted in yellow, the 1.2 fluid ounce rate is in red, and then the untreated will always be in green, just to kind of help keep them separated in your mind. So if you look at the 4-leaf, the 9-leaf applications, really there's not a lot of difference between the untreated check at first bloom. But where you do start to see issues show up is in terms of nodes above white flower. If you look at where our untreated check is at, these untreated checks at first bloom were sitting at 8 nodes above white flower. Typically, if I have cotton that's 8 to 10 nodes above white flower at first bloom, I know I got a pretty good bit of horsepower in that plant. I feel like I got pretty good yield potential right there. So you can look at what a low rate of 2,4-D did to it at 4-leaf. But look at what the high rate did to it. That's 1.2 fluid ounces. Again, that's 1/10 of that Pepsi can. Basically, you're looking at cotton that's cut out. You went from eight node above white flower cotton to about 3.5, 4 node above white flower cotton. You're basically coming into bloom cut out. Now, given some of the varieties today, it's been my experience. I don't know that cut out is what it once was. I've seen varieties ride at 5 nodes above white flower for 2 to 3 to 4 weeks on end, given the right growing conditions. But it just goes to show you that we really, really hurt our nodes above white flower, some of those applications. So looking at end of season in terms of height, we do see height reductions from those early season applications. And then we see some cotton that tends to be taller than the untreated checks from some of those mid-season applications. My theory on why that is, those first bloom plus 2 weeks applications probably shed some of that fruit off, just like we talked about earlier. As we shed fruit, Wayne, you mentioned earlier about cotton, you know, fruit retention being your best plant growth regulator. As we shed some of that fruit off, that cotton wanted to go more vegetative, tended to put on more upward growth. And then you can kind of see how much impact that the 1.2 fluid ounce rate had on each of the growth stages versus the 0.06 fluid ounce application. Substantial impact from those applications and the difference between rates. Looking at seed cotton yield, and I apologize for not having lint yields on here. We actually just finished up ginning some of these things the other day. But looking at these data, and again, you know, these are locations over this year, that it looks like if you look at a simulated drift rate or a tank contamination rate of 0.06 fluid ounces per acre, you're not safe from that until about 4 weeks after first bloom. So about the time you're hitting peak bloom, or maybe a week after, depending on how you feel about peak bloom, that's generally when you tend to be safe from that. More concerning is this 1.2 fluid ounce rate. You're not really safe until 6 weeks after first bloom, if you're 6 weeks after first bloom, you're probably, if I had to guess, you're probably getting close to having a crack bowl on there, if not maybe a week or two from it. So it kind of gives you an idea in your mind of how sensitive some of these things can be. So another way we wanted to look at this is looking at it in terms of digging into that yield data and figuring out, it's easy to show seed cotton yields and reductions here and there, but you know, where specifically did it hurt some of this cotton? And one of the ways to do that is to look at how percent open these things are. So a guy and his colleagues in Georgia actually mapped these cotton plants, and they mapped it in 1 foot sections. So from at the ground to 1 foot, 1 foot to 2 foot, 2 foot to 3 foot, 3 foot to 4 foot. And you may ask why we mapped it like that. I can tell you in my particular case, especially at some of those 1.2 fluid ounce rates, it blew the terminal out of that cotton. And you think about some of the box mapping data that Blake talked to you about a few minutes ago. When you're box mapping cotton, you basically are pulling fruit, say node 5 position 1, and putting in a specific hole, node 6 position 1, node 8 position 2, whatever the case may be. When the terminal is blown out of a cotton plant, you really don't have the option of doing that because you got 2, 3, 4 terminals coming out. So because of that, they chose to map it in 1 foot sections and look at how open it was in different sections of those plants. So this percent open is the additive effects from all those 1 foot sections of those cotton plants. So basically, if you look at basically from first bloom at the low rate and then first bloom plus 2 weeks at both rates over all the way to first bloom plus 6 weeks, all the cotton that was on that plant was essentially open. And this was after they had defoliated it. You look at some of the earlier application timings, particularly the high rate at 4 leaf and both rates at 9 leaf. Even though those fruit were there, we got about 60 to 80% of what was there actually open. Some of that, the fruit came off, you put new fruit on to try to compensate like cotton will, it didn't mature out, we couldn't get it open no matter how much PGR you put on it. Now, I know this is a lot of numbers, and I got kind of disgusted with myself for even putting a table like this together, but I put some red circles on here just to illustrate a point. And this is where I was talking to you about guys and some Galen Morgan and some others actually went in and looked at these plants in 1 foot sections. They counted the total number of bowls in that section and then how many were open. So if you look at this column right here, for example, that's telling you that of all the bowls in that 0 to 1 foot section, 100% of them were open. And so you can see on the 4 leaf applications, we had 97% open in 0 to 1 foot at that low rate, but we only had 79% open at that 1.2 fluid ounce rate. So even though some of the bowls were there, we couldn't get them open. Look at the 9 leaf, we went from 80% open in that 0 to 1 foot section to 66% open in that 0 to 1 foot section. Now what this percent total is telling you, the percent total is telling you of all the bowls on the plant, what percentage of those bowls were located in that 0 to 1 foot section, regardless of whether they were open or closed. So if there's 100, just for example, if there are 100 bowls on a given set of plants, and that number was 10%, that's telling you there were 10 bowls in that 0 to 1 foot section, whether or not they were open or closed, if that makes sense. And this percent open is telling you of those 10 bowls, what percent of those were open. So if it's 100, 10 of those would be open. If it was 10 rather and 10 were open, it's 100%. If there were 10 bowls and 5 were open, it would be 50%, so on and so forth. So if you look at the percent opens, It kind of went like I suspected it would. When you look at the applications made at first bloom, that had the greatest impact on percent open in that 1 to 2 foot section, because that's the fruit that were there at the time the application was made, essentially from 12 to 24 inches. And then you look at it, that impacted in the 2 to 3 foot section as well. The first bloom and the first bloom plus 2 weeks where we went from 90% open to 58% at the rate titration, and then 91% open to 76% open because of the difference in rate with those. So a picture's worth a thousand words, the old saying goes, and I will apologize for some of these pictures. I took these with my iPhone. If you guys keep your iPhone in your shirt pocket like I do, there tends to be smashed up cotton leaves and dirt and junk and everything else, so the lens is a little dirty, but it'll kind of illustrate the point that I'm talking about. This was in Starkville this year at the Plant Science Research Center just north of town. This was $4.99. It was irrigated. That's the untreated check. So on your left, we used WeedR 64. That's 0.06 fluid ounces per acre applied to four-leaf cotton. You can see all the leaves and stuff in there and the cotton that's not yet open. And then on your right is the 1.2 fluid ounce per acre rate applied to four-leaf cotton. You can see the difference there. Nine-leaf applications, same setup, 0.06 on your left, 1.2 on your right. First bloom applications. First bloom plus 2 weeks. First bloom plus 4 weeks is where we start feeling like we're a little bit safer. But if you look, you can still see in the upper portion of some of these plants, we still got a little bit of a switch there where stuff is starting to not want to open up for us. And then first bloom plus 6 weeks, just to give you an idea of that. So to wrap this up, I certainly think that we all knew this, that 2,4-D can adversely affect plant growth and affect yield. And it looks like, for the most part, we're most sensitive between the 9-leaf stage and 2 weeks after first bloom. However, if the rate were high enough, certainly we could be susceptible at 4-leaf or before, or we could be susceptible, you know, probably for a couple of weeks even after that first bloom plus 2 week rating. Based on some of the numbers we're seeing here, I suspect we could be somewhat susceptible all the way out to peak bloom if the rate happened to be high enough. But the bigger question in my mind is where is the floor for sublethal rates of 2,4-D on cotton? What is that low number where if we leave it in a tank, if it gets drifted on us, where is it going to cause injury? I can tell you, the 1,4, like a 1,421x rate was the 0.06 ounce, is that right? Yeah. So the 0.06 fluid ounce per acre application rate is essentially 1/421st of a 1x rate. So if you take 0.06 times 421, you should get a pint, is basically what that's trying to tell you. And we're still seeing injury from that. So does it take a 1/500th rate not to see injury? Does it take a 1/1000th rate not to see injury? We don't yet know where that is. And really, the biggest reason for doing this is when this technology comes to market, if we do happen to see some events where it moves off site, and a grower happens to know when and or where it came from, to help them make a decision on what to do with that, whether they need to call the insurance company and mow it down or ride it out to the end of the season, whatever the case may be. With that will conclude my remarks. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to address those. Dr. Nichols. Oh, you can.
Can you tell me the date of exposure? Can you tell me the rate of exposure? And can you tell me the impact on yield based on the data that we now have in agriculture?
No. So typically when I look at exposure to something or another in cotton, so let's just say there's a fruiting gap in cotton for whatever reason, and they call me to the field 4 weeks later or something. I start counting nodes, see how many nodes I got above where that gap is. In the Mid-South, I figure 2.75 to 3 days per node up and down, and I start doing the math back, and I start asking them, okay, did you have cloudy weather 3 weeks ago? Did you have a plant bug shot 3 weeks ago that may have been late or have not went out or was ineffective? Those are the kind of questions I started asking to try to kind of get to the bottom of where that came from. The issue that I ran into, and I called Guy about this summer, the issue that I run into is when you blow that terminal out, all bets are off. It's not a three-node vertical fruiting index when the terminal's blown out anymore. A blown-out terminal is a blown-out terminal. Wayne's showing me five, it may be five. I don't know. Crazy cotton's crazy cotton's all I can tell you. But it does, but it's hard to determine how long ago it actually was because you can't really count. Now, if it's not all the way across the field, you could go to the other part of the field and make some inferences about maybe when it was. But it does make it somewhat challenging. And I will say this, I don't want to paint a, I'm not trying, by any means trying to paint a doom and gloom picture for these technologies. Because, I mean, if you go to Mississippi anyway, I can tell you now, I've met with these growers a lot, they're excited about these technologies. With the pigweed problems that we have, they're excited about them. If we keep driving this Liberty train the way we're driving it, they're going to need these technologies. But this, we're trying to get a handle on this off-site movement thing. And I will give Dow and Monsanto a lot of credit. They've been very proactive in addressing these things, just trying to prevent them as best they can through education and having some of these kind of answers so if and when they do happen, we can kind of work with them and work with the growers to provide the best solution. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding, 2015. Yep.
And we need to be ready for this. The company, everybody needs to be ready for this somehow.
Yep. Absolutely. Dr. Morgan.
Darren, would you have expected a similar response from the choline formulation?
I would have. I just thinking about an AI load. You know, AI to AI, I would. The biggest, and I've not looked at it extensively as some have, it's minor, or my experience with the choline formulation, with the differences in molecular weight or formulation or whatever the case may be, certainly reduced potential for volatility, and certainly it does seem to kind of minimize off-site movement to a degree. But on an AI to AI basis, I would fully expect it to be just as active as a Weed R64, you know, whatever formulation you may be using. I mean, I'm in my mind, that goes back to an AI load issue. Additional questions?
There, yes? With the use of 2,4-D, and I'm not weak by any means, when would, say, a normal application of 2,4-D for off-target, you know, not talking about high field? How, I know, it used to be 2,4-5-T on rice, you know, they cut it out. Is there a time when 2,4-D shouldn't be used in the season or not supposed to be, even off target? I don't know. I'm asking.
Yeah, there is. I could tell you the most likely times, in my opinion, are probably going to be from emergence to about bloom. And a lot of that just is with pressure from whatever species is there. Most times, by the time we get to bloom, if we've not got it under control, we're not going to get it under control. And if we have, we're usually making or have made lay-by applications with residuals already. So my gut feeling would be that what I'm going to call a 53 to 55 day period from planting until bloom, and that's going to be kind of that critical time, in my opinion. Now, if you're coming off of another crop that may be getting an application later, that could certainly happen. But in cotton, I would say, from emergence to about 53 to 55 days, and blooms are going to start to appear.
So if you think about this, you've got corn, cotton, and soybean. They're planted in that order.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the cotton starts to bloom, a lot of soybean could be 2 weeks.
Yep. That's where I mentioned coming off of other crops. Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.